Inconceivable!
Will you please act like you have more than a two-word vocabulary?
Is there air? You don't know!
And now, a yak.
Yak?
Hey, don't touch that dial. You found Secular Yakking.
I'm Robert.
And I'm Amy.
After years.
Many years of yakking at each other.
We're here to yak at you.
So sit back and enjoy the yakking.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. Hope you had a wonderful week.
I hope everyone did.
And it was a holiday weekend.
It was indeed.
So Memorial Day.
Yes.
Cool.
Is that all you
got
to say?
That's all I got right now.
We're tired.
Yeah, it was a long holiday.
It's been a very long weekend. That is true.
Okay.
Anyways, let's get on with the show, please.
We have Twitter followers.
Okie dokie.
We have Jacqueline.
Mm-hmm.
Scott Weldon. Spiritual Skept. I wonder if that's supposed to be scared, Spiritual Skeptic.
Who knows? Maybe you'll get corrected.
I don't know. Laura Pitmaniac. Pitmanic. Sorry.
Probably Manic, yeah.
Reason Alliance Media.
Mm.
That's it for this week.
Oh, that's good.
And you can follow us, too, at Secular Yakking.
I'm not going to say anything this time.
That's all there is.
All right.
So, I'm going to be doing a rally.
Yes, you are.
June 29th in Olympia, Washington State.
This month.
Well, yeah, this month.
Yes. It's June already. Can you believe that?
I know that.
I know. It's just freaking me out. Anyway,
it's called We the People Rally, Bring Back Our Motto.
Yes, and I'll be able to go now.
Yes, you will.
And
it's going to be kind of a protest rally against Franklin Graham's Decision America tour, because he's going to be there the same day, same time.
Yes. That'll be interesting.
That will be interesting.
It's going to be a very interesting day.
Yeah. And there has been a slight change in the lineup.
Oh, has there?
Yeah. Lilith will not be able to attend due to medical reasons, but that's okay.
Oh, okay.
Because Tarkus Claypool will be joining us.
Right. Like
also from the Satanic Temple.
Right. Like the second command kind of thing.
Yeah, kind of. So he's awesome. I've actually met him before.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, it's going to be cool having him speak. I wanted him to speak to my group some years ago, and it didn't work out. So now I get to have it happen anyway.
All righty. But, yeah, that's definitely going to be a long, busy day.
Yeah. June 29th, 11 a.m.
Oh, yeah.
Bring signs.
Signs.
E pluribus unum, better motto, secular, separation of church state, stuff like that.
Anything you can think of.
Pretty much anything.
Well, I guess within reason.
Yeah, within reason.
Alrighty.
Okay. We have an update from last week.
Oh, did we?
Remember when we talked about that cross in Port Neches, Texas?
Right. That tiny little piece of land.
Yeah, the 20 by 20
in piece, a park.
Yeah. Inside the park.
Right.
Well, they sold it to the church, remember?
Right. For like $100, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I also said the FFRF was looking into what options they had.
Uh-huh.
Well, they came up with a far better plan than even I could have imagined.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They offered the town 20 times what the church paid for it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. $2,000.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. FFRF co-president Annie Laurie Gaylor said, "In these times of fiscal austerity and municipal bankruptcies, we are trying to ensure that the city has resources to provide essential public services to its residents. $2,000 will make that 20 times more certain than $100.
Absolutely. Have they heard back or anything?
Not as far as I know.
I'm curious because here is another group offering, you know, 10 times the amount of what they sold it for. And the fact that they had only sold it to one particular party.
Right.
And it's public land.
Right. And now they've got a better offer on the table.
Yeah. One you kind of can't ignore.
Yeah. So I have a feeling they're going to have to either back out of the sale.
Right.
Or get a lawsuit.
Yeah. Because that's very interesting.
Yeah. Well, I'll keep an eye on that, too.
Yeah. I'd like to see how that turns out. Because that's technically, if the park went with that, that's a lot of money they could do some good with.
Yeah.
I mean, but the question, you know, remains. Are they just wanting to sell to the one particular group? And that was the whole point of this in the first place.
I have a feeling they just wanted to sell to the church.
Of course. Yes, I definitely see that.
But we'll find out.
All right.
All right. I got another cool story. Well, not a cool story. This one's kind of frustrating.
You might want to rethink your
words. This one's frustrating, to say the least.
Okay.
Father who took teen daughter out of state to get married is going to jail.
Okay. Elaborate.
Okay. An Ashton, Idaho man who took his 14-year-old daughter out of state to marry a 24-year-old man will spend at least 120 days in jail.
Okay. First of all, that just seems pretty creepy.
Yeah, well, we're not done with creepy.
Okay.
Keith Strawn, the father, was sentenced to one felony injury to child charge Tuesday afternoon. Okay. In August 2015, Strawn took his 14-year-old daughter and then 24-year-old Aaron Seton to Missouri to consent to their marriage.
My God, they still do that there?
Yeah, apparently. Seton, now 25, pleaded guilty to rape charge in April and is believed to have impregnated her. Oh,
Jesus.
He raped her.
Well, now, my question is, was this the...
This was
okay,
the girl...
I totally doubt, but I could be wrong, the 14-year-old... like this guy, or is this just a total dad setting this thing up?
Total and, dad setting this thing up.
I was going to say, because I have heard of stories of, you know, you've got, say, a teenager, maybe, okay, certainly not 14, I'm thinking like 17, and then a guy who's like, say, 21 or something, and they get that, but it was just...
A shotgun marriage?
Statutory, right? What?
Shotgun marriage.
Well, that's what this is. This is insane.
And it gets a little better. Oh. Well, actually, no, it gets worse.
I was going to say, would you stop picking the wrong words? It's like the total opposite of
court records show that Strawn harbored and protected Strawn by allowing him to live with his teenage daughter.
Wait,
so
after their
after
wedding or before?
After the wedding.
Harbored, yeah, after. Yeah.
So this 24-year-old rapes a 14-year-old, gets her pregnant.
Jesus.
And is forced to marry her.
And
Here's here's what Strawn told investigators.
Okay, fine.
If you get them pregnant, then you marry them.
Holy hell.
Now, I'm not sure of the verse, but somewhere in Leviticus.
Now, Strawn was the dad, right?
Strawn was the dad.
Okay.
So somewhere, I'm wondering if he got his 50 shekels. Because somewhere in Leviticus, it says, if you rape a virgin,
right.
If you rape a virgin, then you must pay the father 50 shekels and you have to marry her and
right.
you cannot get divorced.
That is correct. It's crazy, but it's correct.
Yeah.
Stupid, but it's correct.
And that's got to be where this, if you get him pregnant, then you marry him, comes from.
Okay. First of all, they went to Missouri, you said?
Uh-huh. From Idaho, because Missouri has apparently a 14-year-old law.
They still have a law where they can
do that. I didn't check.
But either way, why in the hell would a father condone a 14-year-old girl to marry a 24-year-old guy?
Religion and tradition. That's it.
Again,
there is no other reason for
again,
it.
Again, I stick with my saying that religion is a bad word. I don't care what anybody says. That's my opinion.
It's dangerous.
It's a bad word.
Yeah.
It really is.
Well, during the sentencing, District Judge Greg Moeller told a defendant, while you spend those 120 days in jail, perhaps you will think about the 120 days your daughter was in a vile farce of a marriage to a rapist.
What kind of father can look at his... Well, I say this as I'm thinking of there's many other cases that
I'm sure this isn't
this
the only
scenario,
one.
Or things, just your own flesh and blood, your own child, to put them through things like that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's sad, but it's ridiculous.
Well, luckily... they're working on getting the marriage annulled.
It's obviously. Crazy that's even legal. I mean, truly.
I know. A 14-year-old, no.
A 14-year-old girl.
I'm sorry. There's an age of consent, and it should be followed whether the parents want them married or not.
I mean, this is the 21st century.
Right.
It sure doesn't seem like it in their house.
Obviously not.
I mean, that's just crazy. Or the wrong country, for that matter.
Yeah, because that's something that might happen somewhere in the Middle East.
Mm-hmm.
And then they would stone her.
And I don't understand why there isn't this little click that goes off in the father's head that somewhere inside him, somewhere, regardless of what his belief, you know, somewhere, even if it's deep, deep down, why is there not a click that says something's not right about this?
I know. I don't get it.
I don't understand when people don't have that click. I mean, let alone the fact that it's not way up at the surface, but not even deep down that they're willing to do something like this or the starve your child because God told you to or some crap like that. You know, the horrible things that they do. I can't get that mindset at all.
Yeah, this just frustrates the hell out of me that people can still think this way about sex and getting pregnant and that you have to get married if you get a girl pregnant.
That is just so damn stupid.
Yeah.
My God, is that stupid. But I just to do that regardless to your own kid.
Yeah.
And like you said, the whole they get knocked up, they got to get married. That's like the dumbest freaking thing ever.
I agree.
All right, we're just ranting at this point.
Okay, here's something that's a little more fun. And it actually is more fun.
All right, fine.
Ray Comfort Group told they can't hand out books and Subway gift cards at Reason Rally.
Say that again, translate in English.
Okay, I'll just read the story.
Okay, fine.
This weekend is the Reason Rally in Washington, D.C., the largest gathering of atheists for secular government type stuff, right?
Right.
On the National Mall in D.C.
Right.
Where was I? Oh, Ray Comfort saw this as a chance to spread the gospel to the heathens.
Oh, of course he did.
His plan was to give out copies of his new book about atheism and $25,000 in Subway gift cards using hundreds, if not thousands, of volunteers.
So he has a book about atheism?
Yeah, I have an issue with Ray Comfort writing a book about atheism.
Exactly. Thank you.
I don't agree with it because he always misrepresents what atheism is to begin with, and I don't think it's going to be very much truthful.
You think?
Yeah. He has a way with twisting words around.
You think? So anyways, back to the book and the 25,000 in gift cards.
Anyway,
The
DC police felt that this action was closer to a protest and would need a permit, and the group would have to stay on the other side of the National Mall and have no contact with the Reason Rally participants.
Okay, so the DC police told this to Ray Comfort.
Yeah, Ray Comfort's group.
Because and the reason that they felt it was closer to a protest was because the volume of people he had, correct? Because technically, if you think about it, when you have that many people, that could be a danger,
which is why
you have to get a permit, and the police need to be notified in advance because you could be looking at trouble, basically, with that many people getting out of control. Right.
And with that, it was basically defeating the purpose of what Ray Comfort wanted to do. He couldn't give his books away.
Oh, and that was mostly why he was there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Obviously. So he decided the best course would be to cancel the mass evangelizing campaign and just focus on filming of the event with his crew of 17. And he also said the Christians of his group would have to eat Subway for the next 40 years.
Okay, he could also go and hand that out to homeless people or...
Wow, you're like psychic or something.
Totally. But no, seriously, he actually said that there. Well, we bought all these. We're just going to have to eat them all now.
Right.
Versus all the things he could do with that.
Right. Well, after some pushing from the readers of the Friendly Atheist blog, Comfort is going to give all the cards to the homeless.
Oh, see, I didn't even read it ahead, and I knew that. It just makes sense. That's so ridiculous that didn't come out of his mouth the first time.
I know. That should have been like the first thing. So what are we going to do with these? Let's give them to hungry people.
Duh.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez. But that kind of shows you a little bit about him, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
I mean...
I've always said he's somewhat dishonest.
Yeah, I just had several people just pop into my head that kind of fits in that category.
Yeah, I know. And they all do about the same thing.
Pretty much.
We're going to have Tom back on, and you missed it again.
Yes.
Yeah. But we finally have a name, and a proper name.
Okay.
It's called Yak from the Past.
Yak from the Past? Now that I like.
Yeah.
And this is about history. That happens in history.
That is correct.
So if we could foretell the future, we could call it Yak into the Future?
Yeah.
Or Yak to the Future. That's what it is. Yak to the Future.
Yak to the Future, yes.
Sorry, I don't have superpowers and I can't tell the future, so I guess we're not going to be able to have that segment.
Yeah, well, they do say you can learn from the past and know what your future is going to be.
Now, if only they'd actually learn. Anyways.
Welcome back, Tom.
Hello.
Most of you know Tom's been on several times. I think this is going to be a weekly segment, right?
It is.
Okay, just making sure. And we do finally have a real name.
We do. Was it Yak? Yak from the Past?
Yak from the Past.
Yak from the Past.
And that was listener submitted, but stupid me forgot to write down who submitted it. But I'll look it up.
Thank you, whoever did that one. We'll figure that out. I also want all the listeners to know that I have a really small kitten in my lap, so if I sound distracted, that's why. And I apologize in advance. But he was so sleepy, and I just couldn't bring myself to put him back in his cage.
I suppose we'll forgive you this time.
Okay. So last week I touched on the concept of Protestant privilege being the foundation of so-called religious freedom in America.
Right.
Remember that? This is part two of our two-parter. So I went back, I listened to the segment from last week, and I think I should kind of clarify what I mean by that. I kind of mentioned it in passing, but didn't really give any concrete examples. So in 1987, political scientist and historian H. Frank Way wrote an essay called The Death of the Christian Nation, which looked at how church-state relations have changed over time. In that essay are some great examples of the Protestant privilege that I'm talking about. Like the case of John Ruggles. In 1811, John Ruggles was convicted of blasphemy for stating publicly that Jesus, quote, this is a quote, what Jesus Christ was a bastard and his mother must have been a whore, end quote.
Okay.
This happened in New York. He was convicted of blasphemy. The case was appealed to the New York Supreme Court on grounds that the ruling violated Ruggles' free exercise of religion.
Okay.
And the court disagreed, ruling that the conviction was just because, quote, the people of the state professed the general doctrines of Christianity, and to scandalize the author of these doctrines is not only impious, but even in respect to the obligations due to society, is a gross violation of decency and good order. So by blaspheming Christianity, Ruggles was essentially committing an offense against public order.
Okay.
And Judge Kent, who ruled on it, went on to state that blasphemy or attacks on other religious beliefs, like those of Muslims or Buddhists, did not constitute offenses against public order because, quote, morality is deeply engrafted upon Christianity, not upon the worship of those imposters. So there we can see kind of how they believe that religion is the foundation of society, and the Protestant Christian religion has a privileged place among religions, even in the courts.
Right. And when was this again?
That was in 1811.
Okay, 1811.
In New York.
Okay.
New York. So this is just one example, but it shows that Christianity was viewed as the bedrock of society, morality, and public order. Christianity, and especially Protestant Christianity, was the privileged religious belief. Sabbath closing laws are another example of Christian privilege. There were lots of laws that said basically businesses had to be closed on the Sabbath.
So like blue laws.
Blue laws, basically, yeah.
Yeah.
To protect Christian privilege with government power was to protect community standards.
Okay.
And obviously this is against everything we think of as religious freedom today. So how do we get from this communal view of religious freedom to our modern view of religious freedom as an individual right? Now, a lot of it has to do with immigration, or most of it does. In the mid-19th century, there was a huge influx of Catholic immigrants into the United States. In 1785, it's estimated that there were about 35,000 Catholics in all of the United States, which I did the math, I looked up all the numbers, and that comes out to less than 1% of the population.
Okay.
It's like 0.08% of the population. By 1870, when things really began to change in the church-state debate, as we're going to talk about here in a second, there were about 6 million Catholics, which was about 15% of the population.
Wow.
So it exploded.
Oh, yeah. Well, there was a good reason for it, too.
Yeah,
there was quite a bit of Irish and Italian immigrants.
And Italian immigrants, absolutely. So while not an overwhelming majority, it's a significant minority, especially since Catholic communities tended to be concentrated in certain areas, like you're saying, Irish and Italian communities. By 1906, and actually I didn't know this, I found this interesting. By 1906, Catholicism was the majority religion in all of New England, New York, New Jersey, Michigan, and a few other states. Idaho is one of them. We're going to talk about Idaho in a minute.
Wow.
Yeah, I didn't know that. I thought that was fascinating.
That is rather interesting.
Yeah, and it makes sense, when, especially New England, New York, New Jersey, when you consider Irish and Italian immigrants, it makes sense.
Right.
Now, it's worth mentioning that Americans generally distrusted Catholics and didn't really view them as real Christians. Most Americans referred to Catholics as papists, mm-hmm. something you've heard before, insinuating they didn't follow Christ, but rather followed the Pope.
Yeah, I saw Gangs of New York, so yeah.
There you go. In several states, Catholic children were actually severely punished in public schools for refusing to follow Protestant religious exercises. In Maine in 1854, a child's hands were beaten for 30 minutes with like a switch until they agreed to recite the Ten Commandments as part of a Protestant religious exercise in the classroom. So you're talking extreme.
Yeah, that's fairly extreme, yeah.
Yeah, and it's not in my notes, but just an aside, the mother of that child sued the state and lost.
Wow.
Yeah. So even as late as 1854, there was still the courts were protecting this Protestant privilege.
Okay.
However, as the Catholic population began to swell, they began to exercise more political power. In Ohio in 1870, and if you recall from just a few minutes ago, in 1870, Catholics made up about 15% of the population. Catholics threatened to vote against bonds for public schools if Bible readings were not removed from classes, public school classes.
So a little bit of political power play going on there.
Yeah. Well, keep in mind that judges were elected.
Right. Okay.
So that plays part of it. The school board, fearing a loss of revenue, acquiesced to their demands, and several members of the community brought suit against the board in an effort to get them to reverse their decision. Sorry, my cat is like screaming at the door. The case went to the Ohio Supreme Court, and the Protestants that had sued so that the Bible readings could continue lost, which was an H. Frank Way in the essay I mentioned. Notes that this was the first time that the courts, quote, abandoned the communitarian mode of analysis and attacked the Christian framework as singularly inappropriate.
Oh, so interesting.
It's really the first time the courts ruled against protecting Protestant privilege.
Okay.
And it would take another 40 years or so for this kind of to catch on. It was kind of a trickle effect, but as most things are in the U.S.
Right.
It wasn't Idaho, it was Iowa. In 1905, a small town in Iowa sold its school building and essentially worked out a deal where the Catholic parochial school acted as the public school.
Hmm.
Now, as you might imagine, Protestants, who were actually the minority in Iowa, weren't very happy with this, and they sued. And it went to the Iowa Supreme Court in 1918, and they ruled that public funds could not be used to maintain the parochial school, regardless if that was what the majority religion wanted or not. So there you see where it switched from protecting the majority to protecting the minority.
Right.
So the huge influx of Catholics and the subsequent political power they held, combined with the general American distrust of Catholics, was the catalyst that finally sent the courts down the path of truly being neutral in matters of religion and using their judicial powers to protect minority religions from being subjects to the standard of majority religions and from having their tax dollars used to support those religions.
Right.
So the lesson here is that church-state relations are always in a state of flux. You never know what's going to happen next.
Right.
In America. The other lesson is that some of the things the founding fathers said, particularly Jefferson and Madison, didn't necessarily line up with how things were in reality. People love to quote Jefferson, you know, separation of church and state. Madison had some pretty unkind things to say about religion.
Right.
But those things didn't really reflect the reality. So for all their erudite language concerning religious freedom and the separation of church and state, their personal opinions of people like Jefferson and Madison did not become general opinion until well into the 19th and early 20th centuries. And that is my spiel.
Well, that is awesome.
Yes.
Very, very
interesting stuff in there. And I do want to say I highly recommend people, if they're interested in this, look up the essay. It's called The Death of the Christian Nation, The Judiciary and Church-State Relations. It's
okay.
From H. Way.
Okay.
He wrote it in 1987. It goes into more detail than I have time to do here on the segment.
Okay.
But it's really, really good, and I highly recommend that. And I don't know what I'm going to do next week, but I'll think of something fun.
Okay. Well, we'll put that essay in the show notes, hopefully.
Yes.
And
there will be a longer version of this, of course, on Danthropology. For those who don't know, I write for the blog Danthropology. And in addition to this history segment, I do a weekly, I basically take this segment and turn it into a blog post and stick it on Danthropology.
Right. And then there'll be a link on there as well.
Yes. Once I have that written and submitted, I should probably get to work on that.
That would probably be a good idea.
All right.
Well, as usual, very enlightening.
Thank you. Thank you.
And I am looking forward to something interesting next week.
Yes.
All right. Thanks, Tom.
I am an old man. Most people hate me, but I don't like them either. So that makes it all even.
And we have another Potter Award this week.
I would hope so, because didn't we do a Bailey last week?
Yeah, I think so.
I think we did.
Yeah,
didn't we?
Yeah.
Well, either way, Potter.
So, the Potter Award this week goes to Dr. Roslyn Osgood, Chair of the Broward County School Board.
So a Mrs. Potter Award.
A Mrs. Potter, yes. Earlier this month, during a worship service at Calvary Chapel, Fort Lauderdale Church, Dr. Osgood got up on the stage and asked the crowd to pray for students and staff. Not horrible, right? That's fine. You're at a church.
Yeah.
That in itself isn't really a problem, but she went on to say something that is a little less.
Okay.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
And I have some audio for you.
Our children need your prayers. They need the love of people that love God to be a light in their life. Well, we not only talk the talk, but we walk the walk as we demonstrate the love of Christ in their life. So if you would join me right now as I pray for our children in our school system, even for the teachers and those that handle our children, that they will understand that it is a ministry and that they're there to meet the needs of our children. God has really blessed me this school year that a lot of my principals were transitioned out. And he filled those spots with new principals that were saved, principals that love the Lord. So If you will join me, my personal prayer is that God would connect churches and faith-based institutions to schools and to children and to teachers and principals, that we will begin to demonstrate the love of Christ so that the Spirit of God can be manifested in the schools and in the lives of our children, that transformation would take place.
Okay.
Is she talking all schools?
Especially Broward County School, because she's the chair of the school board. So let's break out.
So this started at church, right?
This was at a church. This is during church service, which is why it's churchy.
Okay.
There's music in the background.
Yeah, the whole blah, blah, blah. Yeah. But she's talking about all schools, right?
Yeah, she wants to put more holy people in schools so that schools and churches and spiritual worship places can do more church in school, is what it sounds like to me.
Once again, just ignoring that whole separation of church and state thing.
Well, she did say that a lot of her principals left, and she spilled, and those spots were filled with principals who were saved, principals that love the Lord.
She was very happy about
that. Oh, she was incredibly happy. And she wants more teachers that are super Christian, apparently. So that they can evangelize to the students and bring ministry. And I think she said, bring ministry back to the school.
Yeah, I believe she did.
Yes, she did.
I love how not only does she ignore the whole separation of church and state, regardless of that, I love how she ignores the fact that there's more than just her religion on this planet.
Oh, yeah, I know.
I'm...
That's not all she ignores.
All right, fine.
In January 2016 school board meeting, a group of parents had legitimate complaints about abuse in the alternative schools in the county and brought them to the board's attention after getting no traction from the staff of the schools. And I'm talking about actual abuse.
Really?
Yeah, corporal punishment.
Well, I don't know. It's funny. Why I was listening to her talk, I was picturing nuns slapping hands with rulers and stuff. Yeah,
basically. Well, more than that, they're slapping heads.
Right. Yeah, no, because I went to Catholic school. I know that.
So, board chair Rosalind. So, when these parents came up and started talking, Rosalind Osgood snapped at them and then chided them. Finally, she cut them off and told them to leave.
Yeah, because we don't want to hear what we don't want to hear.
Right. She told them she didn't like the parents' tone and language, which was tough but fair from obscene, right? Uh-huh. I listened to a lot of this because I wanted to. Uh-huh. And they had legitimate complaints. They were saying things like, you know, the system has failed and you haven't done a good job and right. things like nothing.
That right. And let me guess, she sticks her fingers in her ear and goes, la, 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 I can't
no,
hear you.
She turns off the mic.
Well, basically, not, yeah, that's the same concept.
Right. She says, we're done after 30 minutes, which is the regular allotted time for public comment in their things. So she said, well, we're done. We're not doing anymore. You guys just need to go sit down.
It's her way, no highway option.
Right. Even when a student asked the board to get his tormentors to stop harassing him.
The adults are his tormentors and harassers.
Yeah, she said that there was a rule about 30 minutes and she couldn't go over it.
Oh, baloney.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like I said, it's my way, no highway option.
Oh, exactly.
And that's why it's the whole, oh, got to turn the mic off. Sorry, can't hear you.
Well, talking about no highway option.
Huh.
In 2014, she introduced a policy that would have required parents to follow the dress code when dropping off their kids.
Say what?
She decided that parents dropping off the kids should not be allowed to wear pajama bottoms, hair curlers, tank tops, or saggy jeans.
What country does she think we're in?
Florida.
Right?
No. She actually suggested that parents show up like they're going to church or the office.
Now, see, I would walk into that school wearing a pair of pajamas, my hair all done in curlers that I did not take out, or in a tank top. And then I'll sag my pajama bottoms. Oh, and I'll go with like thong flip-flops.
Oh, yeah. That'll do her in.
Yeah.
Yeah. So she wants to, it's one thing to regulate dress code for the kids in the school.
Right.
Okay. Which I have issues with.
Which anyway. I totally have issues with. Yeah.
But to try and regulate the parents' dress code? I mean, how is that enforceable? You got to run out to the car and say, hey, you can't wear that?
Well, not only that, they're adults, not minors.
Right.
In America.
In America. So, no.
No, there's nowhere other than, say, maybe your job where you work
right.
that you have to follow a dress code ever. I mean, other than like when you walk into the store and it says no shirt, no shoes, no service kind of thing.
Yeah, that's different. That's
but that's not dictating what you can and cannot wear,
right.
you know. But yeah, it like I said, she is, you know, her own kingdom.
Yeah,
and
which is,
all will do as I say.
Which it was why she qualified for the Potter Award
yeah,
this week.
Yeah, she's definitely a Miss Potter.
Yeah, very, very worthy.
God, the nerve of so many people.
You'd think I'd run out.
You really would, you know, but Sadly, you don't.
I know. It's almost fun.
Fun and sad.
I know.
And really freaking irritating, by the way.
Well, maybe you should start looking for them.
Oh, no, no, no. That's what I have you for. So sure. We're good.
And that's all the yakking I got.
So we will see you next week.
We always like to hear your feedback, so leave us a voicemail at 704-802-YAK or an email at podcast@secularyakking.com.
More input.
All comments are welcome. We like to hear the good, the bad, and the ugly. You also can find us on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and Google+.
If you like our show, head over to your podcast directory of choice and leave us a 5-star review. If you really like the show, support the show on our Podbean patron page.
I'd buy that for $1.
And we'll be back next week with more yakking to please your eardrums.
This show is a member of the Secular Outreach Network, an affiliation of Secular Media Producers. Learn more at secularoutreach.com.